This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. How's it going with you? It must be very close to those mountain bike nationals.
I am so just ready for it. We've been 11 weeks now driving a huge, big manual van with a very big bike trailer over to Rotorua. With 13 very talented, enthusiastic young men who are training for the North Islands at the moment. And starting from Saturday, it'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then I'm all done. Until I drive them to Christchurch in October.
And then it's on to fundraising for Space Camp.
Yeah, back to fundraising for Space Camp. Although I've been doing that at the same time and doing all my jobs. And doing this, Sam. And trying to get our ethics stuff for our book and, you know, all that stuff.
It sounds like you've got, like, what are you going to do, like, tomorrow?
I can tell you.
Get all that done.
There won't be any rest.
And who are we introducing today?
Oh, it has been a great pleasure to introduce one of our wonderful Green MPs who are doing everything they can to make our world a better place, Scott Willis. Scott is the spokesperson for rural communities, for Dunedin, for regional development and for small business. So he's doing all the right things. Scott, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Mawira, and thank you, Sam. Thank you for inviting me onto this fantastic podcast. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but let's go for it.
I think you missed one, Mawira. I think you missed energy.
Oh, yeah, energy. Actually, I've got energy written down, but I wrote it so fast I couldn't actually read that word.
It's a remarkable overlap with your field.
Especially since I'm working in green hydrogen and other amazing things right now. That's a bit horrendous, but oh, we got to talk about green hydrogen instead. Sorry about that, Scott.
Welcome, Scott. I think it's definitely the first time you've been on the show as a Green MP. That's exciting.
Yes. No, it certainly is. And I'm a new MP, so it's been a learning curve for the past few months, getting used to the different protocols, the processes, the puerile nature of debate in the House. All of those fun things.
There are people who are similarly on a learning curve who are also ministers. That's a bit scary.
That is absolutely terrifying. In fact, we've heard the rhetoric of evidence-based policy, but we've seen very little of it. And I think the inexperience of many ministers in the government is now on full view.
So coming back to you, on the basis of what the experience you've had so far, would you recommend it?
Would I recommend it? I don't know if anyone would really want to be a politician, but certainly in my previous life, managing an NGO and working at a kaupapa Māori organisation and working as a consultant, I had the ability to do all kinds of things. I had all kinds of freedoms, but I didn't have the ability to change big stuff. And that is one thing that I feel that we can do as politicians at scale. We can make things happen at scale. At the moment, that's a little bit frustrating because we're seeing some real damage being done. But I'm pretty comfortable that will be only temporary.
unless the changes that they make are not temporary things.
Yes.
You dig up a national park, then it's got a big hole in it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So yeah, there's the fast track legislation is underway, and that's a real concern to us, because it's essentially giving big industry a free pass to bulldoze our precious native wildlife. It's got, you know, it'll have big impact on the environment, and is a real subversion of any democratic checks and balances. So this is a priority concern for us at the moment.
And you've got a new co-leader who gave a quite inspiring speech yesterday.
Oh, look, I'm over the moon to be led by our co-leaders. So we've got Chloe along with Marama, and you know, Chloe and Marama both have deep connections to community in different parts of the Motu. You know, Chloe's been so strong on climate justice. We've got Marama, who is our, you know, our guide for Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and so strong on that. And are really together, I am confident that what they can lead us really well in dealing with this three-headed taniwha of a government to deliver for people and planet. They are inspiring. They're inspiring.
What got you inspired to, I don't know if it's a change career, is it an evolution of your career? Anyway, what inspired you to take your career in that direction?
I had a number of people that I'd worked with who were doing good things. People like Eugenie Sage, my good friend and mentor, Jeanette Fitzsimons, Mojo Mathers, Sue Kedgley, James Shaw, Kevin Haig, a number of people who I saw were able to make things happen, Gareth Hughes, and I liked what they stood for. And I also felt the frustration of working at a community level where there were things that needed legislative change to make work and needed somebody with an experience of working at the flax roots to deliver them. So I thought it might be time to step up, and I, of course, was flattered by the requests that were made to me, and so did stand.
What are you hoping to achieve?
Well, at the moment, I'm working on an energy bill to make our electricity market more transparent, more innovative, and I'm hoping that we get that through this year. So I'm working on that most directly. I'm also working to support the South Dunedin Future Program, because we need to take this example of flax roots leadership, of dynamic adaptive pathway planning, and demonstrate how other coastal cities, how other riverine settlements can adapt, can manage the climate crisis without having societal collapse or inequities. So those are two areas that I'm working on heavily at the moment. There are lots of other areas, of course, but those are two key areas.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Tom Waits, "The Piano Has Been Drinking." Why this one?
Well, I love Tom Waits. This is fun, and it also sort of talks about the chaos of Parliament at the moment and of politics under urgency. So that's why I chose this one. And it's because you asked me and I had nothing else on the top of my mind.
The piano has been drinking. My nectar is asleep. And the combo went back to New York. The jukebox says to take a leak. And the carpet needs a haircut. And the spotlight looks like a prison break. Cause the telephone's out of cigarettes. the balcony is on the make, and a piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking, and the menus are all freezing, and the light man's blind in one eye, and he can't see out of the other. And a piano tune has got a hearing aid, and showed up with his mother. And a piano has been drinking. And a piano has been drinking. As the bouncer is a sumo wrestler, cream puff Casper milk toast, and the owner is a mental midget with a IQ of a fence post. 'Cause the piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. And you can't find your waitress with a Geiger counter, and she hates you and your friends, and you just can't get served without her. And the box office is drooling, and the bar stools are on fire, and the newspapers were full. Ashtrays have retired, 'cause the piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. Not me. Not me. Not me. Not me. Not me.
So the chaos of Parliament. What's the what does your week look like?
We haven't had anything that I would call a typical week yet. This week is recess. So I will be heading off tomorrow up to Hamilton, etc. But a week under urgency means that we have morning meetings, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We might have select committee on Monday morning, work to do in the office through Monday afternoon. Tuesday, we might be sitting in the morning, and then question time in the afternoon from 2 till 3, and then we might have a bill dropped on us or a repeal dropped on us that we then debate, and that can go through all three stages with a committee stage. That'll keep us going till 10 o'clock at night or midnight with a dinner break, and then we might start again at 8 o'clock in the morning and go through to midday, have a two-hour lunch break or an hour lunch break, depending on what we've been given under urgency, and we can go through to 10 o'clock or midnight again. Thursdays typically tend to be a bit shorter, but they have also gone through to 10 o'clock or midnight. And Fridays, we might get to come home, or we might be doing visits, meetings, or something like that. So it's really hard. There isn't anything that's typical at the moment. It's been a bit busy, you might say.
All those repeals that they've been putting through with seemingly nothing to replace them, how do you have a sensible discussion about that? What's the opposition do when they're repealing something and replacing it with nothing? It doesn't give you much room to talk about it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So what happens through stage one and stage two of a bill, then typically there's what's called committee of the whole. And Committee of the Whole is not, it's not structured. So it is an opportunity for the opposition to pose questions, and the minister in charge has to reply. They don't have to give a useful answer, but they have to reply. Well, and so what happens is that under Committee of the Whole, we all, people jump up and compete to pose questions, and they all go on record. So they're all on Hansard. So we might jump up, we might be talking about repeal of the clean car discount or the Auckland fuel tax or the disestablishment of the Māori Health Authority, whatever. And we jump up and we pose questions, and the speaker or the chair will allow us to keep going as long as we're asking new questions. And what we try and do is reach out. We try and get answers, and we try and reach out and reach some sort of humanity in the government to make good change. We haven't been successful so far, but we try.
Is that orchestrated, or is it sort of sign language across the along the chamber about what you're going to ask next and things?
It's pretty abstract, random, actually. There is, you know, amongst the Greens, we will send a message to someone to come down to the House if there's something coming up that we think they can talk about. Everyone has to stay in Parliament, but you don't have to be in the debating chamber. There'll always be someone in the debating chamber. And what happens is that the chair will be sitting beside the minister. And when one person's finished speaking for up to the allocated 5 minutes, everyone who wants to speak will jump up and they'll say, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. And only one of them will be called. And so it's like dogs baying, it's raucous. And then they get their 5 minutes, and they sometimes don't take that long, and then somebody else jumps up. And at a certain time, someone from the government will try and put a stop to it, and they'll call a close to the debate. Sometimes they're successful before we've had any full answer, and stuff just gets, you know, passed through the next stage. That's the most frustrating thing, when we know that we want to find out more and we can't, and the chair will accord them the right to shut the debate down.
One of the things that Chloe talked about was the need for local organising, and she was partly talking about Greens organising for the next election, but I think she was also talking about organising in response to threats to the environment or to people or whatever, and getting organised about that. Because one of the things that they're doing is shortcutting the public submissions.
Yes, exactly. That's right. And I think, you know, there are public submissions open on the fast track legislation up until the 16th of April, which is not far away. But that is one of the bills that one of the pieces of legislation that is going to select committee. So that is open. And what we need to do is mobilize our communities, people who care about what's happening, to make submissions to select committee, to sign petitions against oil and gas, to sign the open letter about the fast track legislation, to turn up to the Palestinian support protests, to turn up for disability rights, for pride events, simply to be bodies on the street to show this government that they may be in power at this point in time, but they do not have a mandate to do what they're doing.
In so many cases, it seems like they're going down an authoritarian route of the minister decides. And before I was so annoyed about the fast track legislation, I was annoyed about the automatic weapons The sports clubs have said, we're going to, you know, sports clubs should be allowed to, ignoring the fact that the mosque shooter was a member of a sports club. And there's got a report being written at which the minister decides. I'm horrified at that, but there doesn't seem to be any way of me doing anything.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the things that we can do as individuals is to send letters and to sign petitions and to pay attention to what's being asked in the House. There's very little we can do when they are trying to have the numbers to enact it. But on your behalf, Green MPs are asking those difficult questions in the House. On your behalf, we are trying our best to hold the government to account, and we're seeking responses from them. We're seeking their justification for making these changes. We're asking what justification they have to give themselves extraordinary powers to approve projects, to approve legislation that we know is going to put our communities at risk. We know that is going to destroy some of our last remaining wild rivers, or dig up the conservation estate for coal mines, or conduct seabed mining, or any number of terrible things like the gold mine that's being proposed in Central. The only way we can fight that is by holding them to account and delaying as well, delaying as long as we can what they are trying to do through extensive debate in the House. But the other thing, of course, that we have is the ability to bear witness to this and not let people forget, so that in the next, well, when Winston is no longer Deputy Prime Minister, things might get a little bit more interesting. Certainly, we hope that this government doesn't last full term. But if it does last one term, we want it to be only one term. And then we have to do a repair job.
I imagine it's interesting for the Greens, who have a higher percentage of the vote, I think, than ACT and New Zealand First.
Yes.
Yet they are going around talking about a mandate.
Yes.
As if that is, and because they've got a mandate, which is dubious, therefore it doesn't matter that they're going through, you know, dismantling all of these things and making it all the minister just decides without seemingly any of the courts or anything. It just seems it's a weird position to be in.
Oh yes, I mean, I've had Christopher Luxon suggest to me that the past 6 years have been disastrous, and now they have a mandate to do all these things. Nobody expected smoke-free legislation to be repealed. There's no mandate for that. But more than that, the cobbling together of a coalition of unlikely partners, National, New Zealand First, and ACT, has created this monster, this taniwha that is more than the sum of its parts. It's nobody predicted that would deliver what it has delivered. The most anti-democratic, the most anti-environmental, the most vicious government I can remember. And I don't think anyone who voted for National ever envisaged this to happen. I don't think those who voted for New Zealand First expected this to happen. I don't think those who voted for ACT expected this to happen. So it's not as if it was spelled out what this three-party, three-headed taniwha of a government would look like, and that they would be seeking a mandate to do what they're doing. That was never put forward. The individual parties put things forward, but it wasn't put forward as a package.
No, the negotiation doesn't seem to have been any idea of like weighing up the different things and coming up together with an integrated thing. It's just, we'll have that, we'll have that, we'll have that.
Ah, exactly. And, you know, we've had Casey Costello in the House being asked, where did the smoke-free legislation come from? Why is it being done now under urgency? And her answer was, it's being done now because we want to do it now. And and because it's in our coalition agreement. But why is it in your coalition agreement? She wouldn't go there. She kept on repeating that it's in the coalition agreement, so we put it in the 100-day plan, so that's why we're doing it. It's not we didn't hear about who wrote it for her or for New Zealand First. We didn't hear about why it's part of their policy, why wanting to increase access to cigarettes is an important thing for New Zealand First. We didn't hear any of that. They didn't want to talk about that. They just said that it's theirs and they want to do it.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tāhoa hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. And I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the love, the care, the compassion, the empathy, the sympathy, the comfort, the companionship, of which we are so richly deserving and can innately provide. And of course, for me, my greatest healing, my greatest comfort is through connection with other living beings. All the living beings that surround us all the time in the living world. Those human animals with whom we sense an affinity. And those other life forms, which of course have been on this earth far longer than us and have laid the foundation for a paradise home just for us and just for everybody else as well. And of course we see in nature this beautiful principle of manaaki, manaakitaka, of exchange. And we see so many beautiful examples of co-evolution, cohabitation, symbiosis, cooperation, and the different strengths, the different skills of these myriad life forms being celebrated and encouraged to come to the fore. And we are no different. And I've been very fortunate today to have the wonderful Waimate Centennial School to visit me. And of course, this beautiful school, these 37 amazing children, year six children, are heading off on camp. And we are their first stop on their camp and all very excited. We had a wonderful time together. And they had beautiful, beautiful knowledge to share. And, you know, we all really enjoyed just having fun and laughing and joking with one another. And it was a wonderful experience. And I think that sometimes it's so important that we are completely real with one another. Something I've always found helpful in terms of working with people as an environmental educator is that it's so fundamental to the success of a program that I am totally myself, and I encourage everybody who's coming along to be entirely themselves. And in this way we can really connect, we can have a really meaningful experience, and we can feel safe. And I've always enjoyed, you know, dressing up and expressing myself. And so I think it's a wonderful opportunity for those lovely children who maybe haven't encountered me before to really enjoy moving into that space of safety and freedom to think about how they want to express themselves. And to think about if they do feel discomfort, if they do feel jarred, to be able to work through that and find the fun and the joy that is awaiting them. So it was really a fantastic experience today, and They asked me many, many wonderful questions, including a lot of ethical questions about, you know, should we bring back the moa? If we brought back the moa, could we hunt them? You know, a lot of really, really deep, beautiful questions. And there was a wee boy who enjoyed doing impersonations of me, and his teachers and things were getting, you know, very cross. And I just loved it. And I said to him, oh, you're very good at that. You know, it's hard to impersonate me. And what other accents can you do? And so, you know, we tried out all these different accents and things together. And so he was able to, you know, see those skills and gifts that he had in a different kind of way. And he was definitely wanting to impress his lovely wee friend who was asking all these ethical questions. And I just thought how wonderful it is that we can come together and we can learn from each other all the time. So I really hope that you are having many, many helpful and significant learning experiences in your own life at the moment. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Scott Willis.
Scott, you are in a party that is positive by its design, that was meant for social good, that has been responsible for so much of the cool change that we've had in our country over these last years. Very fortunate to have Nandor Tanchos in our community, and he is a good friend of my family. And so, you know, like I know the vibe that underpinned the Green Party at its inception. So how, with that being the space that you come from, how do you survive, and how does your optimism survive in the face of so much negativity from the three-headed taniwha?
Well, we have very good people in caucus and in our staff, and we support each other. And you know, we lost our good friend Ifiso Collins recently, but I think that I still look at Ifiso's seat. I still see him when we're in the house. I still hear his voice. You know, his little asides, his jokes about what we're facing, and it makes me smile, because, you know, I think Chloe quoted Ifiso, the statement he made in his maiden speech: no one stands alone, no one succeeds alone, and no one suffers alone. And we really feel that in our caucus and in our staff, we are all working together for everyone. And our membership is right behind us. And that, even when we're in the most difficult of situations, knowing that people have our back is so, so important.
We've come out of this incredible time, the COVID time, where we saw our country with everybody working together to keep everybody safe, looking after their neighbours just by, you know, it's really hard for humans as social creatures to isolate themselves, but for the well-being of our communities, we did that. And then when we were allowed out, we looked after each other in our communities, and people were back in their veggie gardens and back, you know, walking in the streets and saying hello to one another. It was this beautiful time. And then somehow this real darkness came into it, like we started having these protests, and now we're being led by, like, I just don't even know how to explain to my overseas friends who are comparing our Jacinda years with everything that happened there and all this beauty that came out of our country, this shining light to the world, and now this, like, big black cloud has descended over us, and I don't know how to explain that to people.
I know. It's almost as if madness has taken over the world, because we're seeing right-wing reactionary politics in all kinds of places now, and it's almost as if we had things too good, and people have to experience a bit of hardship, or a lot of hardship. We have to be challenged to realize what we've lost. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've been sitting on the Economic Development Innovation and Science Select Committee, and we've had the Fair Digital Trading Bill to work on and to hear submissions on. And this is around ensuring that our local fourth estate can get a fair price for the material that the tech titans are scraping from our media, the Google, the Metas. This is a really important bill, because we know that at the moment, so much of our information is controlled by corporates that have no democratic input. And we know that there are people being led down the rabbit hole, as we saw with the parliamentary protests. So it is really, really important that we support and enable a healthy democratic fourth estate, one that's able to be critical, independent of government, but not controlled by the corporates, is there for us. So that seems to me to be one key element that we really do need.
But if you look at those three parties and what they've become, they're fed by people who have gone down the rabbit hole, who are following those really weird narratives, who are sharing them, and actually a critical media taking a critical approach, actually digging into facts, looking at the whakapapa of knowledge, that doesn't support their narrative. So they would be fundamentally opposed to supporting a healthy, vibrant, strong, open, unbiased media. It doesn't fit their story.
Yes, no, that's right. It doesn't, but, you know, they don't, there are always opportunities, and I do think that there's a chance that the Fair Digital Trading Bill may well be supported, which might offer some lifeline to the smaller fourth estate, to Allied Press, to the Ashburton Guardian, to the smaller media that are helping us keep tabs on what's happening in our communities. Other than that, we do need to ensure that we organise well, that we talk to our communities, that we engage even people that we might not normally get along with in debate, and try and understand them and work to make them understand us. And I think this is another part that we don't do very well in Aotearoa. We don't support civics in our education system.
Yeah.
And we tend to avoid it in many social situations. We tend to avoid discussing politics, religion, but it would be really healthy if we didn't refrain from it, if we were willing to engage.
Yeah. And you were saying before that the people who voted for the National Party would be looking at this and this, say, this is not what I voted for. And actually, I know that that's exactly what's happening, because I have many friends who are National Party voters, and they are expressing their real concern about what they're seeing and the impact, especially in what seems like anti-environmental and anti-Māori kind of policy changes that are coming out. And at a community like ours here in the Eastern Bay of Plenty, where we are so fragile and also predominantly Māori, it's like every decision that's being made is targeting this community. And what do I say to them, Scott? How do I make people feel like it's going to be okay?
Well, I think really you've got to say that this is not. The coalition that's been cobbled together is a coalition. So National have accepted whatever they've accepted from their coalition partners. They can't brush it off and say it's not us, because it's their government that is doing it. And I think we need to make sure that, you know, we can provide a government to replace this one. The Greens are more than willing to lead the next government. We can work with anyone who wants something good, but we need to have Kiwis, we need to have the community behind us to be able to do that. And I would hope that people look at what is being done in their name and would realize that this is not good. This is not going to provide a future for our children. This is not going to provide for clean rivers, for thriving nature. And there is a solution to that, but it means ensuring that we get out the vote next time. And we know that youth in particular are concerned about what the future holds for them. We know that there are many people who share our values. We need to ensure that there are more people who understand that we are willing to work with everyone for some really basic stuff, for clean rivers, for renewable electricity, for decarbonizing, for food sovereignty. Those are things that I think people want and people understand. Nobody wants there to be children going hungry. Nobody wants people to be living in poverty and on the street. But somehow they tend to vote for parties that promote that. And we simply need to show that there are ways out of that. And it's not impossible and it's not hard. And the diversity that we can bring and the experience we can bring to that is a good thing.
It's funny that you say nobody wants hungry children, but David Seymour does. He doesn't. He's quite happy for there to be hungry children. He wants to get rid of our Lunches in Schools program, which is the reason why lots of kids go to school, because they get a kai there, because they've got something in their belly, and because they're there, they're eating, so they're learning.
Do you think he really does, or is he playing up to some caricature that someone has worked out will play out well? Same as Shane Jones is pretending to be a Kiwi poor man's Trump.
Yeah.
Do they really believe this stuff, or do they think that that'll work? And I suppose the follow-up question is, if we learn from the American experience, can the sort of the sensible sounding stuff that Scott was just saying stand up to that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he really does believe it. I think it's simply a populist appeal to hit on the most vulnerable, because that's an easy thing to do, and because they can't really fight back, and it's brutal, it's vicious, it's stupid politics, but it appeals to X base, unfortunately.
So you've got 2.5 more years of this. How are you staying positive?
Well, yeah, I don't know. How am I staying positive? We work. There are so many other things that we do in Parliament. It's not simply debate in the House. It's also work on Select Committee, and it's digging into legislation. It's preparing good legislation and hoping it'll be pulled out of the biscuit tin, or that it'll receive some MP support so it can be enacted faster. It's meeting the many, many people I do meet who are working for good things and who want to make change happen and are excited by what a positive government could deliver when it comes to pass. So I keep on ensuring that there are many good parts to what we're able to do, and looking for the opportunities to make things happen, and reaching across the aisle when I can, you know, when I find someone who's willing to work on decarbonising, I will reach out to them and keep on trying to reach the humanity across the aisle.
Is that a hope based on that's what you want to happen, or is it a hope based on any experience?
there are people who are good people, but they don't. I wish they were more principled. Put it that way. I wish they were more principled.
I have some questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last year or so?
Well, the last five months I don't know. The biggest success I've had the pleasure of giving my maiden speech. I've had a number of questions put to ministers that have made them squirm. I have had some success that I can't talk about yet, but will hopefully deliver some good results in the next wee while. And I guess the biggest success isn't yet a success, but it is getting my bill, my transparent electricity pricing bill, underway. I'm very excited about that.
Are you going to get cross-party support for it? Is that what you're angling for?
That's what I'm angling for. Really, we should want a market that works for innovation, a market that works for greater fairness, a market that works for more renewable electricity generation. Everyone should want this.
What's your superpower?
My superpower. My superpower, I guess it's my ability to work with people wherever they come from and to smile even when things get hard.
So do you consider yourself to be an activist?
An activist? I don't know. I'm active. I've certainly been, well, turn up to protests, sign petitions, but I would call myself a pragmatic activist. I want there to be, I don't just want to fight against things, I want to fight for things. I want things to be created. I don't simply want to break, I want to make. And that's why I'm in this position, because I can see the solutions and we only need the political will to deliver them.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I have children and I would like grandchildren, and I can't see much of a future for them if there aren't good people working hard, putting in the mahi to ensure that there is something for them to look forward to. And that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's a concern for our tamariki and our mokopuna and wanting to make sure they have a future.
Maybe that's the humanity that you'll find across the aisle. Because I think that everybody would say that, wouldn't they? It's just a different of opinion on how to get there.
I would hope everyone would say that. And it's not simply my children. I want every single child to have something. And I think that's where we sometimes come up against a difference. So, but you know, I've got lovely, lovely kids next door, and I really enjoy. Little Harry wandered across the road yesterday and down into our property. He'd snuck out the gate. And I love that he could do that. It was a bit naughty, but I want us to have something. I want our community to care.
So what's the biggest challenge or perhaps opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
The biggest challenge or opportunity, the biggest challenge, I think, is ensuring that that we have enough members of the government who are willing to think as individuals rather than think as a tribe, and to think about what matters to them. So to have them understand that what they do as individuals matters. And if they continue to support this backward-looking, regressive, vicious approach by the coalition, then they are not going to be re-elected. So it's ensuring that we reach out to them as people, and not as members of a strange backward-looking tribe, and keeping sight of their humanity, even while we hate what they're doing.
Maybe they are the people who we need everybody to be writing to and talking to.
Yes.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I would say that there is no action too small that is not, there's no action too small that shouldn't be considered, that can't make a difference. So two nights ago, I had somebody talk about their challenge with MSD and offering to lend me their story to use in Parliament. That matters. Those personal stories matter. I have emails coming in every day asking us to be stronger for Palestine. That matters because they're coming to all MPs. That really matters. And we've seen the government shift on its approach to Palestine through the past few months. Not enough, nowhere near enough, but we've seen them shift. So everything matters. A signature on a petition, sharing a social media post from your the positive side of politics, all of that matters. So nothing is too small.
Thank you for that. Moira.
Scott, the only way that there will be change is by having people like you who are sitting there waiting to be the change, to voice the change, to inspire the change. And it's going to be pretty easy over the next while until they finally demolish themselves to be feeling a bit sad about the impact of this current government. But I'm glad to know that when they finally go, which hopefully won't be too long, there'll be people like you waiting to try and fix the damage they've done. Thank you for the commitment that you've made to our natural world and to our social world. And I wish you all the best in your pursuit of what's fair and right for everybody. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Mawira. Thank you. And thank you, Sam. Thank you both for the opportunity to blow some bubbles. And and all the best with the cycling bike tour. It sounds really exciting.
Thank you very much. It's fun.
Thank you.
Compañía. aunque mi vida esté de sombras llena, no necesito amar, no necesito. Yo comprendo que amar es una pena, que una pena de amor es infinito.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is Lasa Destinosa. I'm Samuel Mann in Soyuz Bay, Otipoti, Dunedin, with Ngawira Karatai in Whakatane. And we've been joined from Waitati by Scott Willis. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ma te wa.
Repetir el sermón de la montaña. Por eso de llevar hasta que muera.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.